Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tawny Alvarez, your host from Verrill, and today our guest is Hamza Khan, founder of Inclusion Maine. And today we're talking about the foundation of building a diversity, equity, and inclusion program. By focusing on the foundation, organizations are more likely to build a program that achieves the goals that they've sought and create a more diverse and inclusive work environment. Hamza, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Definitely. Thank you so much for having me. I'm an avid listener of the show. So thank you so much for including me. I'm honored to be a part of it.
Well, I'm excited to hear that. And why don't you give our listeners a little bit of background on you, your involvement with human resources, and specifically why you're a guest today on the show concerning foundational DE&I programs.
Definitely. Like a lot of folks, I started out my career in HR really without expecting to start out a career in HR. After college, I began working in HR and diversity, equity, and inclusion, kind of the combination of two on a strategic initiative around the early career talent pipeline in the banking industry, workforce development, and workforce diversification. So that's how I really started out my HR career. And since then, I've moved into in a human resources director role for a nonprofit where I'm doing really all aspects of HR. So I began in a role that was really focused on a combination of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and how we can ensure that human resources is focused on really being inclusive in our practices and the way we're working within organizations. And in my current role, I for a nonprofit, as I mentioned, I work with water, wastewater systems, really municipal systems, some of our partners as well, really a wide variety of organizations, and get a chance to see the diversity within our state and the kinds of sometimes a lack of diversity as well. And I also, as you mentioned, founded Inclusion Maine, which is an organization that's focused on diversity, equity, and inclusion. How can we create a more inclusive state within Maine to help ensure that we're retaining the diversity that's here and helping ensure that there's an inclusive environment for people from all backgrounds, and also help organizations become more inclusive within for their own DEI efforts, which we'll get into a little bit today. So I hope that gives you a good background, and I'm really excited to talk about how organizations can start their diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts, and what are some of the steps they can do early to set them out, set themselves up for success, for their first 5 years or however long, when they're getting their program started.
So many really cool things there. And I think that one of the reasons why I've enjoyed the discussions that we've had already just privately is multifaceted. But one of the cool things about you and your experience is that it's so broad. I mean, you were working for a financial institution and now you work at a nonprofit and in a municipal type way, in an environment that isn't similar to a lot of other nonprofits. And then also the Inclusion Maine work that you do. So you get to see DE&I from all these different vantage points, which to me helps to garner and create more knowledge about what works in some industries and what works in other industries.
Yes. Yep. I agree completely. That's kind of the opportunity that I've had an opportunity to really see, to see that in action when you're in rural Maine, let's say a community in rural Maine, you see how truly different that environment is than a corporate environment. You know, but those the values and the way people engage each other is very different. So the same things certainly don't work across the board, and it's important to see those distinctions. So those perspectives have certainly informed the way I look at diversity, equity, and inclusion, really looking at how can we have a more holistic view and ensure that we're really focused on bringing everybody together and really helping everybody grow through that process. So it's been really exciting to be able to have that broader perspective and be able to look at diversity, equity, and inclusion from many different points of view, and really even some points of view that don't often, you know, get that focus, especially when it comes to rural communities and the way they're dealing with their diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts, or how they're trying to be more inclusive.
Something that you noted earlier, which I think resonates with a lot of our listeners, is the idea that, you know, when you started working in human resources, that wasn't where you saw your life going. That wasn't the plan, but that something drew you to it. That's where you've ended up, and it's this I don't want to say burning passion, but people who are in human resources are passionate about it, whether or not it's dealing with interpersonal relationships, whether or not it's how we act or engage in a work environment. You know, as you've been in the industry longer, is there a specific aspect of it that you can identify from a personal perspective that drew you into this? Or is it just all aspects of diversity and human resources that you enjoy?
I would say the ability to work with people is really what really draws me to human resources and diversity, equity, and inclusion. It being able to have an impact on the lives of people and the way, you know, work is done, helping somebody grow and helping even mentor or engage folks. That ability to work with people and help others grow is really what drew me to human resources. Although I wasn't really expecting to go into human resources, in the past I had done a lot of work, whether it was being involved, you know, having a civic focus or being involved politically, or really volunteering and really working with many different types of people. And really working with a wide variety of folks at USM. That's where I attended, a lot of my undergraduate education. At that institution, you know, the student population was quite diverse, and working with people or studying with people from rural Maine and working with them in student government, really getting involved, and some of the other activities that we were involved in, working with a lot of diverse students through the Muslim Students Association. Although that wasn't necessarily what you might consider human resources work, it certainly informed my work as I got started in my early days. And then in those early days, the mentorship that I received also helped me grow. But it was really the focus on people, being able to work with people, that's got me interested in human resources. And I would say some of my background, it certainly helped inform that.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez. And today our guest is Humza Khan, founder of Inclusion Maine. And today we're talking about the foundational building blocks for a solid diversity, equity, and inclusion program. Humza, tell me a little bit more about Inclusion Maine and how you came to found it.
So I started Inclusion Maine in the summer of 2020. That was really because of really what was going on nationally. As you may recall, there was a lot of protests after the unfortunate murder of George Floyd. That was something, you know, I had really been passionate about helping create a more inclusive environment within Maine, and had worked with a few organizations. But that's when I really set a goal of becoming intentional about this, helping create a more inclusive state by working with organizations that were interested in this work, whether it's community initiatives or anything that I could get involved in, and then working directly with organizations to help them move their diversity and inclusion efforts forward, help them diversify their workforce, and help build a more inclusive community. So that's really where I got started. And since then, I've been able to work with a few organizations and work on a few initiatives. So it's been really exciting to be able to do that work. But I really started started or with the mission of helping create a more inclusive environment within Maine, and looking at, you know, what was happening nationally and trying to do my part of helping create a more inclusive state that I grown up in.
You know, one of the words that you said kind of in describing the creation of Inclusion Maine is the word intentional. And I think that plays a really big role in today's topic, in what you and I are sitting down and talking about. So intentional, if an organization is getting ready to create or has already created a diversity, equity, and inclusion program, so often I hear from leaders, it's not working, or we have this program, but it's stale, or it's not moving forward. And in my mind, going back to the foundational discussion and making sure you're intentional with your program, it is a really big aspect. But I'd love to talk to you about, in your mind, if there's five steps that an organization must take in foundationally creating a solid DE&I program, what is the first thing that the organization should focus on?
Definitely. And thank you for asking that question. I come across that a lot as well, where there's organizations that are struggling with their diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. They have a commitment, but they don't really know how to get started. And I would say the first step that an organization should take is looking at a commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion. What does that mean for our business? The way we our organization does, you know, how our operations run, how we treat our people, how our procedures are going to change. So that reflection in that first step is really critical for organizations, because it's important to acknowledge that you know, sometimes things are not being done in a way that creates equity for everybody. So it's important to reflect on what processes are causing that barrier, and if we don't address those, then any commitment is likely not going to be successful. So it's really important to reflect on what is going on within the organization and ensure that there's alignment between that and where the organization wants to go. Ensure that there's alignment between where the organization wants to go and what things need to change. So that's where I would say organizations really need, should start, is looking at, you know, where, how things are being done and reflecting on what needs to change in their business, how they treat their people, and how customers will be affected, how customers need to be treated, really looking at their business and what adjustments need to be made.
So often I feel like organizations will blame a diversity program's failure on outside forces. We operate in an environment where it's too difficult to attract and retain the individuals who are diverse, or the type of work we do isn't attractive to diverse candidates. When in fact, really kind of the big thing is, if we put a mirror in front of this organization and they reflected on it, I feel like it's breaking up with a new partner and saying, it's not me, it's you. When really the question or the statement is, it's me, not you. And I have some work to do before I truly can attract the talent pool that I say I'm looking for. When we're talking about that reflection process, is it as easy as handing the organization a mirror, or are there tools that you have found to be more successful in helping an organization reflect?
I think it's definitely important to have a process to that reflection, ensuring that there's opportunities for the leadership to look at, and especially if there's a board, for them to really look at what direction the organization wants to go from its mission, its policies, the investments, how resources are distributed, who are the power holders within the organizations. Often it's the internal pushback that you're going to get is really going to be the hardest thing to overcome for organizations when it comes to diversity, equity, inclusion. So it's for leadership, it's really important to look at that bigger. And even if you're a small business owner, in that same way, you know, if you're that one individual that's got a small team, in that same way, looking at how is the organization structured, where are the resources, who are the power brokers within the organization, and ensuring that if we're going to move towards a more equitable environment, what does that shift look like? When it comes to other segments of the organization, employees, it's important to ensure there is a good communication and opportunities for employees to have a voice in this process, how the organization is doing its business, and what challenges employees are coming across. That's where there's a great deal of value, and there's really a great deal of value in gaining more engagement from employees as well, because you'll see that employees are more invested in their work. So it's important to involve employees, get their feedback, because they're going to know they're going to know the on the ground reality of how things are being done within the organization and where there are disparities, where are there issues coming up. So that's, it's really important to do that. It's important whether to do that in focus groups or creating an employee network. There's employee committees as well. Often there's a few organizations that have prioritized that in Maine. So that's, I would say that is a valuable part of that reflection as well, is getting the employee input. And then when it comes to some of the organizational processes, HR, looking at the hiring process, talent management, really looking at the core of how the organization works, it's important to reflect on that as well. Where are our job postings going? Who's applying for our jobs? Who is our job postings most accessible to? Where are there issues coming from hiring managers? All of those things are really, really critical to reflect on in that early process as well. So I would recommend really breaking that process, that reflection down, understanding the different segments of the business, and getting feedback around where are the disparities, where are the issues, and addressing those first.
So much good information there, Hamza. And I'm looking forward to us discussing kind of some of those things in a little bit more detail, but we are going to take a quick break. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by cmacareer.com and verrill-law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez, your host from Verrill, and today our guest is Hamza Khan, founder of Inclusion Maine. And today we're talking about the foundation of a diversity, equity, and inclusion program. Specifically, by focusing on the foundation, we found that organizations are more likely to build a program that achieves the goals that they've sought and then create a more diverse and inclusive work environment. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about that first foundational step of organizational reflection and what that includes. And Hamza, one of the things that you mentioned that I found so important was the concept of power brokers. And it's not just the people who have the title or who are in leadership positions, but that you have power brokers in every segment of the organization, at every level of the organization, and having those people participate in the process and specifically be part of it is so important. And I think that leads us into the second step that an organization has to consider in creating an effective DE&I program. And if you were going to really quickly sum that up, maybe in two words, what is that second step that organizations need to focus on?
I would say engaging key stakeholders. That's a critical That would be a critical step in really developing a cohesive, holistic diversity, equity, and inclusion effort. Is really engaging people across the organization that hold power.
So when we're talking about engaging key stakeholders, what's that going to look like? And how does that relate to kind of the collection of information that is going to be necessary for us to create this program or our diversity, equity, and inclusion goals and to reach those goals?
Definitely. When we're working with some of the key stakeholders, that would include a lot of the power brokers within our organization, hiring managers, and certainly folks in leadership. It would be incorporating their feedback and understanding what they are prioritizing around diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's also important to ensure that that group gets an opportunity to look at their own biases, whether it's an assessment of their biases or looking at really where they stand as far as their diversity, equity, inclusion, and their own understanding of how to be a more inclusive leader and ensure that the folks within the organization and externally feel included. So it's important to ensure that we're getting feedback from those stakeholders, and we're getting direct feedback. We're really looking at where they're dedicating their resources and how truly resources are being dedicated across the organization, and also looking at how organization how those key stakeholders are perhaps promoting folks within their departments and in the hiring process as well. It's also important to ensure that when we're engaging key stakeholders, it's important to ensure that leadership and folks in leadership positions are accountable when it comes to diversity, equity, inclusion. But this process shouldn't be a process where one person is responsible, for disparities or issues or concerns around equity. It's important to ensure that it's a safe environment for everybody, and that organizations, as they're making the shift towards being more equitable, we're recognizing the issues and we're all working together towards addressing those issues. If there is a leader, there is a particular person, that the blame doesn't necessarily all fall on them, that their department is not creating an equitable environment. And the fact of the matter is, often some of the issues that come from come because of a lack of equity, or exist because of lack of inclusion, they're really issues that are much broader and caused by a variety of factors. So it's important to ensure that we're engaging key stakeholders, we're gathering their feedback, incorporating their feedback into the strategic planning process. We're also looking at how they're distributing resources and how they're really doing their work, and addressing issues of systematic barriers and issues around bias, and also ensuring that it's a safe environment for everybody as the organization moves through this process.
There is a lot going into this process, because we're looking not only just at the organization as a unit, as its own kind of living, breathing thing, but we're also diving into each of the parts of the organization, whether that's as an individual manager, an individual leader, or a department itself, how the department works, whether or not it's cohesive, whether or not it's living the values of the organization that will help to achieve the DE&I goals, but looking at each individual and their biases. And I think that was a really great point that you made. It is about identifying the biases of the individuals and the organization more broadly. So would this, are we moving, or have we already segmented into that second step where we're gathering data? Because a lot of the stuff you've mentioned now is leading me to, okay, well, you've got to get everyone on board with that reflection discussion. But does it a little bit bleed into the data gathering process, or are they separate and distinct?
I would say those are definitely connected, and the data gathering is definitely going to inform that organizational reflection as well. It's also important in the data gathering phase, or really when you're really trying to prioritize that, is looking at the organization as a whole, looking at the employee workforce, what the current makeup is. Often organizations in Maine, the overwhelming majority might be Caucasian, but it's important to acknowledge, you know, where the organization stands and where things currently are. Throughout that data gathering phase, it's also important to look at how the organization is distributing its resources and where funds are being dedicated, whether it's where material is being purchased by the organization, and also looking at are we dedicating resources towards organizations that are local, that are owned by folks from diverse communities, and how are we distributing resources? So that's also part of the data gathering phase. And it's also important to gain feedback throughout the organization around inclusion, how employees are feeling about inclusion, where the efforts currently stand, how employees feel about their environment and the coworkers, what kind of impact customers are having as well. If there's customers, that are also being affected negatively, it's important to acknowledge that as well. So really looking at the organization broadly, looking at specific departments, it's also important to, as you mentioned, to really dive deep into, segments of the organization. Where are we seeing disparities most, and addressing those specific issues? Often that focus of narrowing down and understanding why disparities are existing within a specific department allows you to test and really discover what is going to be most effective within the organization and replicate it. So highly encourage organizations when they're starting out to prioritize data and understanding where the organization stands, how folks currently feel, and what kinds of issues are most prevalent, and ensuring that there's data to back up the strategies that they're going to develop towards becoming a more inclusive organization.
I love too that you've mentioned that this is not just inward focus, but also an outward focus. So who does the organization do business with? Who do they contract with? Who do they support within the community? And all of that speaking to who the organization is. And I think oftentimes employers lose sight of that. These are the charities or the organizations that we've been giving to or working with for decades, but how that can leave out a large segment of the population who may be newer to the scene or who may more align with the organization's values and mission. For those of you who are just joining us, you're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Connie Alvarez, and today our guest is Homza Khan, founder of Inclusion Maine. And today we're talking about foundational building blocks for a diversity, equity, and inclusion program. And prior to the break, we talked about that first foundational block of being organizational reflection. And we just spent some time talking about data gathering and what that looks like. What would you say the third step an organization needs to consider when it's creating a diversity, equity, and inclusion program?
Definitely. I would say the third, and this is really will also inform the other aspects of the diversity, equity, inclusion effort as well, I would say it would be understanding and identifying systematic barriers. We see that throughout the hiring process, often the organizations are struggling to diversify their candidate pools and welcome a more diverse workforce. And it's important to look at the systematic barriers that might be causing that, and how organizations can offer flexibility and work with folks from any background, really diverse background, to help address those systematic barriers and overcome those systematic barriers. So it's important for organizations to really look at, have that broader perspective, as you mentioned, really look at their customer base, look at how they're spending their money, have that broader view and understand the systematic barriers that are causing the disparities that they might see in that data or throughout that organizational reflection.
So when we're talking about this concept of identifying systemic or systematic barriers, do you have any examples of things that when you've been working with organizations or that you've heard other organizations run into, that when you talk about it, you say, gosh, that makes a ton of sense. But while you're living that day to day, you're unable to recognize it because maybe that's the way it's always been done here, or the organization just doesn't have the time or the energy to reflect on those aspects. Mm-hmm.
Yes. One thing that stood out to me, it really quite surprisingly, but I think that organizations are still struggling with this, is really with the hiring process, where organizations are even posting their jobs. It's really quite simple. Organizations looking to diversify and gain a broader workforce, they're really interested in gaining a broader workforce, but often they're only posting on their own website. So that's obviously going to attract only a certain type of crowd, and not reaching out to the local community organizations that exist or folks that can help them publicize their job postings, or relying on third party sources. So that's one of the things that I've been surprised in working with a few organizations, that organizations are still relying on a traditional means. And there's a very much a mentality still that folks will come to the positions, and that, that certainly, was the case, but I think that there's been a shift in that, where there's a desire for organizations to be more proactive in the sources that they're utilizing, and at least utilizing multiple channels to gain candidates, to ensure that they have a wider variety of candidates applying for their positions or having access to their positions. So I would say that's one of the issues that it's a systemic issue. It's kind of a process where how our recruitment team is going to reach out to candidates. But it's all important to address that issue to ensure that at least folks from diverse backgrounds, or really from any background, are going to have access to your positions.
It's interesting because for those listeners who have been in human resources for multiple decades, you're likely laughing right now, because I can remember when the discussion was about the fact that, okay, we only advertise in the newspaper, and now you're telling us we have to advertise online, but I don't know how to do that, and I've always done it just in the newspaper, or I've always done it word of mouth, and now I have to use this other avenue. And that we're at this point in place where there's that shift again, where we're not just advertising online, or if we are advertising online, are the advertisements or the job posts, are they such that you can read them on a mobile device? Is your website compatible from a mobile device standpoint? But now kind of going back to reaching back out to the community and engaging with the community through these other avenues. And I think a lot of people will argue that these are things that human resources has had in their toolbox for a long time, but for some reason that they fail to utilize, whether it's because there's this easier way that has evolved. But we're at this point where we're not achieving the success or the results that that we had hoped to achieve. Is that right?
Definitely. And I would like to add one more aspect to that. It's also ensuring that we're understanding how can we reach a more diverse audience. The way folks, from a new minor background or access. A job posting would be different, slightly different, or different than somebody who's lived here locally, and that's one of the things that we've seen is some organizations have been really successful in attracting a diverse workforce, especially from new minor backgrounds. And that's because they've utilized word of mouth. They've utilized local community resources and community leaders that that have connections. So it's also important to acknowledge that if we're trying to reach a diverse workforce, we might actually be doing work in a completely different way. And the traditional methods might not be effective. So it's really, that's one of the things that I've noticed as well in Maine, that the organizations that are doing it, are doing this work successfully, that are attracting a diverse workforce, they're open to really what it takes, whatever means it takes to attract a diverse workforce. And that's, I think that's the approach that, you know, we can innovate and we can, we can have that kind of flexibility in doing what it takes to attract and reach those communities. And that's what I've seen be most successful.
So many important points there that you've driven home. And I think it's so important for our listeners. With that, so we've talked about the first three elements. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez, your host from Verrill, and today our guest is Hamza Khan, founder of Inclusion Maine. And today we're talking about the foundation of a diversity, equity, and inclusion program. The importance of making sure that you have set up a solid foundation to build your diversity, equity, and inclusion program. Because if you don't do that, the program's not going to work. It's going to crumble. And that's one of the big things that we've found traditionally. So we've spent a good deal of time talking about the first three steps that an organization should do in order to create that solid foundation. We've talked about an organizational reflection. We've talked about data gathering. And we've also talked about identifying systematic barriers, both within the organization and outside. What would be the fourth step that an organization needs to consider in creating an effective diversity, equity, and inclusion program?
I would say the fourth step would be around transparency. One of the things that often happens with diversity, equity, inclusion effort is organizations have a corporate leadership or a staff, a core group of folks that are interested in this work. And sometimes it really remains at that level. The employees on the ground, the hiring managers, they don't often really don't fully understand what is our diversity, equity, and inclusion effort about, and why are we doing this work? Why is the organization really looking to make this shift? How is our work going to be affected by that? So it's important to have that transparency and also to have clear understanding of what direction the organization is going, to have that accountability as well. But it's also important to ensure that there's safety and psychological safety for employees to that, through that process, because that process is going to be difficult for folks. The way, you know, they're used to doing work in a certain way, and being more flexible and being more open, being able to work with a wider, a more diverse workforce and diverse team, those are all things that will be difficult and changes for a lot of folks, and perhaps even changes from a generational standpoint. Perhaps for generations, they've done their family has done something, so it's a core part of their identity. So it's important to ensure that there is transparency in those in that early process, to understand there's to ensure that there's good communication throughout the organization, and that that employees really understand what is why are we dedicating our efforts to this, and that it doesn't become a corporate initiative or a focus that's really that is limited to a few employees. When there's transparency and good communications, employees can buy into that process. They can contribute to that process. And they can articulate why the organization is dedicating its effort, its resources to diversity, equity, and inclusion, and helping create a more inclusive organization. So that's very critical in that goal setting phase. It's important to set clear, measurable goals that employees can buy into, that employees champion themselves. Important to ensure that there's good communication and there's clear goal setting as far as how the organization is going to make changes. And ensure that there's accountability. Often organizations can make a commitment and make a commitment to a large goal, but it's important to ensure that that meaningful goals are set and that there's accountability. As long as there's progress, organizations can continue to move their efforts forward. But if organizations struggle with that transparency, accountability, the DI efforts are likely to suffer. And on the other side, as I mentioned, ensure that there's psychological safety for employees as well, that employees feel safe and they understand that a change is going to take place, but that the organization is going to take steps to work with them and help ensure that the shift, you know, that there's it's a safe environment for really folks from any background. And at the end of the day, when we're talking about a diverse and equitable and inclusive organization, we're talking about an environment that's going to be our organization that's going to be welcoming, our departments and leaders and coaches that are going to be welcoming for people from all backgrounds, value them, allow them to succeed. So it's really working with really any really working with you know, any person, you know, but it's important to ensure that there's psychological safety throughout that process.
So many important points in all the things that you just mentioned. And I think that so often we see organizations that, that don't give all the information to employees at the beginning, that they kind of hide it behind the curtain, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, and keep some aspects of a DE&I program or how they're going to achieve the goals private, or something that only human resources or only the diversity committee is aware of, and that mindset doesn't help everyone to achieve the goal, because if not everyone in the organization is moving towards that goal, it's going to be really difficult for the program or for the initiative to be successful. What do you say to organizations who maybe think that giving employees all the information is too much or will be overwhelming? How do you respond to that either fear or that concern that more information isn't always better?
I agree with that sentiment as well. I think some organizations, if the information is not really clear as far as what direction the organization is really looking to go, or there isn't a kind of a clear specific reason why that feedback is being solicited, often we can get a in a lot of feedback that's coming from many different perspectives, and it can really be counterproductive to diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts for organizations. And that's why I think that reflection is really important, really a focused look, specific look at different segments of the organization. That's really important as well, and the kind of engagement that on the other side, information that employees have access to, it's important to have a balance to that and ensure that the efforts that are taking place are specific, and there's clear understanding of where does the organization want to go, and when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion, what segments of their organizations are going to be effective, and how they're going to how their processes will kind of adapt and change, and that kind of information is important to share broadly, and when there is kind of a request to gain information from employees, it's important to make sure that that information is specific. It's the feedback that we're looking for is clear, because when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion, the topic can really become really broad. It's such a broad topic overall, it's really important to have a focus as to what the organization is looking to achieve, and dedicate your efforts and resources towards that. Oftentimes, what happens on this other side is there might be segments of the population that feel like the resources need to be dedicated to them as well. It might be a segment of the population that's not gotten perhaps attention that needs to, for example, around communication. Often folks with communications disabilities are, even when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion, sometimes can be overlooked. So it's important when those kinds of things happen, when there is feedback that comes from employees about our diversity, equity, and inclusion, where there, where there is a lack of information, or where we have not dedicated resources to specific groups that need resources, it's important to ensure that those challenges are addressed, and those will come up within organization. Often, those kinds of issues come up where a segment of the organization has not received the attention that it necessarily is requested or needed. So it's important in those kinds of situations, once a challenge like that comes up, to take that seriously, to really understand where that disparity might be stemming from, and to incorporate that into the diversity into our efforts. So I agree completely. When it comes to information, it's important to be targeted and to be specific. Sometimes there will be feedback that comes back from employees that you might not expect, and it's important to know that's likely to happen, and that the organization will kind of need to be flexible and adapt to that kind of feedback. So I agree with you completely that it is important to be cautious of how information is being presented, and information that's not specific or information that's general is likely going to solicit feedback that's not helpful to diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts.
So much really helpful information there. That was really great. We're at that time where we're going to have to take a quick break. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tawny Alvarez, your host from Verrill. And today our guest is Humza Khan, founder of Inclusion Maine. And we've been talking about the foundations of a solid diversity, equity, and inclusion program. Over the course of our talks, we've talked about the first four blocks or elements that we need to focus on in creating a successful diversity, equity, and inclusion program. And those are organizational reflection, data gathering, identification of systematic barriers. And right before the break, we were talking about the importance of transparency and the discussion that we have with employees and creating a feeling of psychological safety when we are sharing information and data. Humza, what would you say is the fifth element of really building a solid diversity, equity, and inclusion program?
I would say the last and major aspect would be dedicating resources, whether it's staff resources, funding that's available, professional development and how those resources are being dedicated. When it comes to how resources are distributed within the organization and folks that are leading diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts, it's important to dedicate resources towards those folks or help ensure that there are specific staff that are going to help lead those diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. Going back to our fourth point around transparency, it's important that those folks hold key positions and can help ensure that change is effected across the organization, whether it's somebody in leadership, or a specific DEI professional, or a core group of employees that includes folks in leadership. It's really important that when it comes to starting your DEI efforts, that resources are dedicated towards the work and organizations are intentional about dedicating resources to equity and more equitable environments. So that I would say is really critical as a major piece of starting a DEI program.
And I love how you've brought up the fact that there's multiple elements when we say resources. A lot of organizations will look at resources as just, okay, here's $25,000 that we're going to spend on this quote unquote initiative. But that's not sufficient. Dedicating a leader, somebody making time either in their job or in their expectations to make sure that they can truly focus on this program, on making this plan or these goals work and make sure that they're achievable is so important. And I think something that is often overlooked. So I so very much appreciate this dialogue that you and I have gotten to have today. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's really been an enjoyable show for me.
Thank you so much. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk about Inclusion Maine, to talk about HR, and talk about some of these issues. I really enjoy this work, and I get really excited about these conversations. So thank you for allowing me to be a part of it.
It's definitely clear your excitement, and I hope that our listeners have all been able to hear it just in your voice and the topic as we've discussed it. Thank you, everyone. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Stay tuned for the HR Tip of the Week.
And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
Hi, this is Tawny Alvarez from Verrill. Are you trying to implement a diversity program and you're just not making the strides to increase the diverse candidates that are applying to your open positions? Have you considered changing where you advertise or how you advertise? Have you considered partnering with local organizations who are respected in the communities that you are targeting? Often employers blame the failure of a diversity program on outside factors without taking a good look at things that the organization could change to attract and retain diverse talent. Whether that diversity is based on age, sex, race, socioeconomic status, religion, or disability status, there are ways in which you can direct your targeted ads to these individuals. For more information concerning best practices regarding instituting a diversity program that doesn't violate state or federal anti-discrimination laws, contact a member of Verrill's employment and labor team.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.